Hey, and welcome back to Forgotten Neighbor. Gosh, it's been a while.
It's been a really long time. We both had a child, I think, since we last recorded.
I think we didn't record last, I think we recorded last April.
Last April.
So coming up on a year.
Man.
Yep, but I'm still subscribed to our podcast channel on iTunes.
Hey, look at you.
So, if anyone's faithful to this podcast, it's definitely me.
We'll have at least one person who listened.
I don't know. I don't even know who this is going to get to anymore because yeah. I don't share it. I'm not on social media, so I don't share.
Oh, yeah.
I can't share it. So, like,
wait, you're not on social media anymore. I wouldn't know because I'm not on social
media. You're also not on social media. Well, I'm on Twitter. That's it.
You're on Twitter.
I've deleted Facebook. I've deleted TikTok. And I haven't deleted Instagram yet because I need to download those photos. And then you can put them in, like, a scrapbook, I guess. It's like a program. But once I do that, then I'll.
So this is recent. Fairly recent.
Well, I think my Facebook will be officially deactivated soon because it's been, I don't know what they're cut, 30 days or something. If you don't reactivate it.
Got it.
So,
it's then mine's long gone.
Yeah.
That's the case.
It's like, I don't even miss it. I don't. Yeah. I didn't do Facebook Marketplace. Yeah. Anyways, all that to say, I don't know who's going to get this podcast. Only people who are still subscribed. So, yeah. I'll have to, like, get our wives to share it or something.
I'll be honest. I freeload off my wife's presence on social media. Yeah. I'm like, what's going on with our friends?
Right, yeah. Right. You got to get better friends. Have people who text you these things instead of just updating them.
You know what I would love? You know what my dream is?
What?
I want to start, like, a communal living.
Ooh.
Like, it sounds
I want you to finish this without cult-y. Yeah, without sounding going in and saying this is a cult.
Where I'm the religious leader. Okay. No, I'm just, and all six of my wives.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just kidding. No.
That'll do it.
But no, like, I've always loved the idea of, like, village living.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, where everyone's houses and work and, like, everything is so integrated in, like, you know, you just, like.
Are you talking about, like, off-grid?
I mean, not necessarily.
You're talking proximity.
Proximity. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where, like, I would live right across the street from the people I go to church with, like, that kind of thing. And it's closer now with me because I live so close to our church. But, you know.
How would you regulate the people moving in and moving out the space? Would you have to kick someone out to bring in more people? Would you keep building?
Have to sign a contract.
A contract.
That you will live there at least 30 years.
Whoa! But that doesn't answer. So, like, if you're not, like, friends with them, they, like, not friends with you anymore, they don't go to the church, do you kick them out?
We take your house.
And
all your money.
Be friends with Colin or we kick you out.
Did you know that in Scientology, when you join the Sea Org, which is, like, their elite kind of, you know, like, these are, like, the monastics, you know what I mean? Like, the super spiritual people.
Okay.
You sign the next billion years of your life over to them.
What?
Yeah, because, like, you have, like, next lives. It's a lot. Like, you reincarnate.
The thing that cracks me up is that this contractual agreement carries over from life to life to life. Yeah. And they'd be like, do they keep it on file for a billion years? Mm-hmm. who's the secretary of the Church of Scientology? That's got to be an insane job to sign up for. Be like, you have to keep track of these contracts for 1 billion years. You know what I mean? Like, you better get a good filing cabinet. Because we're coming back.
Lock that sucker up. It's got to survive nuclear holocaust. if we don't have records.
And if your next life, if you don't remember the security passcode,
yes.
You're fired.
What was your security question? What was my mother's maiden name?
That was like
a million lifetimes.
Yeah, that's right. Makes total sense. Yeah. Colin, so we haven't done a podcast in a while, and a lot of our past episodes have been on particular topics.
Mm-hmm.
So if you recall, we did baptism, Lord's Supper.
Apostasy.
Yeah, that prayer. I think that was our last one. Mm-hmm. If the Lord hears the prayers of unbelievers. Do you remember that? That was a good episode.
That was an interesting one.
So, yeah, we did quite a few. topic-based ones, and we've discussed at length wanting to do like book-based ones, and mm-hmm. we actually recorded one that I don't mm-hmm. think we ended up releasing on spiritual gifts.
Yep.
But anyway, so we're to kind of ease back into this podcasting life, mm-hmm. we're gonna do a reading now special, I think is what we're gonna call it. So I want you to give me a rundown of what you're reading currently, and then when you're finished, I'll give you a rundown of what I'm reading currently, and then we'll go from there. So hopefully that's exciting for yes. you, the listener. We want to do more of these, but yes. this is a quick, you know, book special.
Yep. Hopefully you get ideas of yeah, things yep. to read yep. Through this.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm a lot like you, where I read a lot of books at once, all of them very slowly, which probably isn't the best way to read books, but it's what I do.
Well, I beg to differ. I mean, you're very intelligent, so maybe there's something to it. So.
Oh.
You get a plethora of knowledge from different sources.
I think for me, what it is I just like my brain just gets fried on one topic, but I still want to keep reading, so I just switch topics
yeah.
and I read a different book. Like legitimately, that's actually how I feel.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. So I'm reading a few different books right now. So the first one on my Scribd library is The Life of David Brainerd, which it was written by Jonathan Edwards. So this is an old book.
It was written by Jonathan Edwards?
Yeah, yeah. David Brainerd and Jonathan Edwards were, as far as I know, they were tight. Yeah. And David Brainerd was a missionary to the Native Americans, or as the Indians, as they, you know, as they called them. And they, you know, actually I've read that they... that these communities still prefer to be called Indians. So
really,
I don't know. I've just always said Native American. I feel like that's, I don't know. I'm not trying to be offensive. I'm sorry. But he was a missionary to the Native Americans back in the 18th century. And man, like this guy, it basically what it is it's his journal with commentary by Jonathan Edwards.
Wow.
In historical context.
Interesting.
So interesting. This guy, so he was converted actually around, I think, man, I so I'm trying to remember if he was converted around 13 or 14 or if he was in like early 20s. I think it was 13 or 14. I could be wrong about that. I'm not 100% sure. But it's a little bit of a long book to listen to. But he was converted, and he just got this like sense of amazement that God would welcome him, you know, and love him and justify him and call him, because he has such an acute sense of his wickedness. He just, and also probably the most wonderful and encouraging thing about this book is what is his prayer life. He was just always praying, and he talked about getting help in prayer from the Lord. He would say, like, I got a little help from the Lord in prayer. Or he'll say, I had great help from the Lord in prayer today. And I feel like that's something encouraging for me. Like, this man, he struggled in prayer. You know what I mean? He didn't always feel the juju. You know yeah. what I mean? Yeah. Like, he didn't always have the juices flowing when he was praying. But the Lord still heard his prayers. That didn't make them any less prayers. And I feel like that's something that I want to begin asking the Lord for. Like, Lord, give me help. Help me pray to you. Like, I want to pray with more vitality. I want to pray with more heart and more spirit. Give me more of your spirit so that I can pray more sincerely. So that's something that has been encouraging. The next one on my Scribd list that I'm reading right now is called On the Meaning of Sex by Jay Budziszewski. I think that's how
Jay
you pronounce
Boots
it.
Of
I think that's how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very, very, very good book. Okay. Excellent. Highly recommend to everyone. Basically what it is it's a natural law interpretation of the meaning and purpose of human sexuality.
Okay.
And it's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Jesu Budziszewski, I'm pretty sure he's a Catholic, which you know, to our reformational, you know, senses, we might be like, about to nail 95 theses to this book. But
don't read anything Catholic.
But I highly recommend it. This man, he put some really good wisdom down on this. It's been so clarifying to me for like things that like intuitively kind of feel wrong about kind of the sexual revolution culture we live in, but I don't have a super good reason for it. Like I don't have like a Bible verse I can pin to this.
Okay.
But it's very, very helpful. One thing he talks about is that one of the big problems with the sexual revolution is it makes the purpose of human sexuality pleasure. And when you do that, the pleasure actually tends to fizzle. And so he talks a lot about, and you can look up statistics on this, the sexual dissatisfaction of our culture. Like the people who engage the most, you know, have the least restrictions on their impulses, tend to be the least satisfied with their lifestyles.
Yeah.
And he talks about how the pursuit of good instead of the pleasure tends to cause the pleasure to flourish, actually.
Okay.
Yep. Which it's, man, that's just like one part of the book. I the most recent chapter in it I'm reading is on the meaning of sexual purity. So he gets into, he says that there's two modes of sexual purity. One of them is, I think he uses the word continence. So if you're not married, pursuing purity in that way. And then the other is married purity, which he says is faithfulness. And he uses this analogy of like the human soul. Well, he describes it in two different ways, one way for men and one way for women. But yeah, highly, highly recommend it. One chapter I read was on the meaning of sexual beauty, which, man, that was so good. It was so good reading a treatment of that didn't just boil down to, yeah, you got a super hot wife. You know what I mean? Like and I think that, and one thing that he said in that is that actually tends to be dehumanizing.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, people say that with good motives, trying to like compliment, you know, their wife, like, hey, you're looking super good today or something like that. Like people say that with good motives, but one thing he points out is that actually tends toward corruption, and it's so good. And I'm not trying to condemn anyone who says that to their wife or anything like that. I'm just saying it, like I'm learning at this man's feet for this too. Yep. So, and then the last book I'm reading right now is let me get it, Pure in Heart by Garrett Kell. I'm going through this with another member at our church. He's kind of discipling me right now, and we're just working through this together. And it is, man, it's an incredible book. Garrett Kell has a ton of wisdom. He's got a ton of wisdom.
He's a pastor.
Yeah, he's a pastor. And it's also about sexual purity. And it's just his perspective on it is so good, because I'm trying to think back. We've been reading it for a long time. We're working through it kind of slowly. But he goes through like God's intention with human sexuality, and he talks about like what Jesus says. It's all based in the Beatitude: blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
Yeah.
And he says like the point is seeing God. Purity of heart isn't the point. It's a means to an end. God is that end.
Yeah, it's not an achievement in and of itself to give you satisfaction.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and it's a means to the to the pursuit of God, who is the ultimate good, right?
Yep.
And the ultimate joy. There is no joy greater than communion with God, than seeing God. That is the apex, the fulfillment, the telos, the end of human existence.
Yeah.
And so there cannot be a better happiness. And so he talks about like, listen, purity in heart, it's not ultimately about purity in heart. It's ultimately about seeing God.
Yep.
Who is
that's good.
Of utmost holiness.
That's good. So. Yep. Yep. Love it. So give me a quick rundown again, all three that you're currently reading.
Yeah. So Life of David Brainerd by Jonathan Edwards, On the Meaning of Sex by Jay Budziszewski, and Pure in Heart by Garrett Kell.
Love it. And I'll, best I can, put these in the show notes for any listener that wants to snag these. Beautiful.
What are you reading?
Well, as you mentioned, I am a plethora reader. I grab from different books. I tried to be more orderly in the past, where I read one fiction book and one Christian living book, and make it orderly at a time, so I didn't get too crazy and all over the place, and kept it. Brett McCracken and his Wisdom Pyramid book. Is that what the name of the book is called?
I think so. Wisdom Pyramid. Paul Gandy has talked to me about it before.
Yeah, yeah, great book. And one of the things he talks about is one of the benefits of a book is that you can spend an extended period of time with an author and really learn from them and what they're saying, get a feel for them. So I apologize to Brett McCracken because I'm doing a little bit of injustice to that wisdom by spreading my reading time around. But so the first book that I'm reading currently is
you probably write him a letter of apology.
I will. I'm sure he's waiting. One I'm working through very slowly, I got last year, is Providence by John Piper. Been very good so far, answering a lot of questions, and honestly, I'm loving it a lot. People dislike John Piper for this very topic and this very thing, which is probably why he wrote such a large book on it. But people, this is where they divide with John Piper on usually, and it's I can see why. It's hard to get around that concept if you just hear some sermon excerpts or interview or an Ask Pastor John episode and you hear him say some of these things. But reading through it and talking about how God's providence is over even evil and sin in the world, it's a very reformed topic to read on and discuss and to teach. But I've found it incredibly helpful. So maybe 13-15% of the way through, and I'm trying to read that. I think an audiobook is available, but I'm trying to read that one. So I love history, so I'm always trying to read some sort of history book. And there are the memoirs of Ulysses S. Grant, who is my favorite person in U.S. history, and for multiple reasons. I find so many lessons from his life, and his memoirs are all one book, but the books I found to read, the audiobooks, sorry, I'm calling audiobooks reading. Do what you will.
Are audiobooks, except not all of them are.
But yeah, they're sprinkled in here for me. I probably say 50% at the end of the year, 50% are audiobooks for me, if not more. But anyway, so the one I found, it breaks them up into three books. And so I'm on the third one, and this is getting near the end of his role in the Civil War, how it's coming to an end. And it is fascinating. I love Ulysses S. Grant's life. I find so many lessons for modern day, just how he was like dedicated to his family. He was principled. He was apolitical. He didn't pursue the office of presidency. He wanted to be requested and asked of him, which maybe inherently is like a pride thing, which you actually see come up because they wanted him to run for a third election or a third term, which at that point you could run for as many terms as you wanted. And they wanted him to run for a third term because he was going to be the only one that could run and win and keep the country unified. They were going through Reconstruction. But in his second term as president, he had a number of scandals in his administration, not him specifically, but people in his administration just kind of stabbed him in the back and lied to him, and people he was very close to. He was either incredibly trusting and thus very ignorant to all these things going on, or less likely, but also talked about he was incredibly evil and was in on all these things. I don't think that, but some historians say that. So anyways, I'm on his personal memoir. So he wrote these as he was dying from cancer. And oh, wow. So he couldn't talk at this point at this. And so he was, for a while he was dictating it, and then he couldn't talk anymore. So he was just writing it, and he pumped this out very quickly because he was dying. And, he actually was in so much pain. He needed to take morphine to keep the pain down. But when he took morphine, his brain was foggy and clouded, and he couldn't think straight and remember details. So he stopped taking the morphine and was just in incredible pain as he was finishing these.
Oh my goodness.
Now, his friend, Mark Twain, is the one who published these.
Did you know we have a national park named after him in Missouri?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And,
Southeast Missouri.
Did you know that he is buried in my hometown of Elmira, New York? So
so you basically,
yeah, we've
you're
got
Mark,
we've
you're
got
Mark
his body.
Twain.
I'm Mark. Oh, I, yes, I am Mark Twain.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay. Quite the honor.
but anyways, he published his memoirs. But people thought that these were so well written. These memoirs, they were widely praised. They were so well written. They thought Mark Twain actually wrote these. And Grant just gave him some like details and he wrote these, but that wasn't the case. Mark Twain did not write these. This is from Grant, and it is very well written, very thorough.
Wow.
His memory is insane. So yeah, loving that.
Wow.
I could talk about Grant all day long. So anyways, next I'm reading Deeper by Dane Ortlund, which is in a series of books. So the first one was rather popular, Gentle and Lowly. Many of you likely have heard of it, if not read it, Gentle and Lowly. And then next is Rejoice and Tremble by Michael Reeves, also really good. And this is the third book in that series, Deeper. And it's How Do Sinners Change? And it is incredible. And at our community group, few days ago, I read a little excerpt from this book, and it just, so much is clicking for me in this series, Gentle and Lowly, Rejoice and Tremble, and then Deeper. So much is clicking for me in the Christian life of like how you make change and what it means to be filled with the Spirit,
right,
and like looking to Christ. And so this is. And it's a good, easy read. You can read, you don't, it's not heady. It won't be over your head. It's not incredibly academic. So you can read this as a lay person very easily. So,
it's actually, I think it's written for it's not like an academic book at all, right?
Yeah. So there, all the books in this series, they release two of them. So it's the full length one, and then they have an abbreviated version. And at the introduction, they talk about how the full length one is meant for, you know, obviously everybody, but specifically pastors and people in ministry in the church.
Okay.
And then the abbreviated version, they release specifically for people who are not in ministry that like can kind of get the gist of it, but without going through the whole book. So really good. And then lastly, going through the book Church Elders and the Nine Mark series. So I've read it before. For different things, but it's been a minute, so I thought it might be helpful to read it again. So, and I guess I'm out of time. So.
That was my watch told me.
Your watch, man.
It's 10 o'clock.
Is that a Toshiba?
It's a Casio.
Oh, the Casio, the classic Casio watch. Yep. Oh my gosh,
you
baller. You
know, I used to have an Apple Watch, and I loved that thing.
You did have an Apple Watch.
I did have an Apple Watch. I loved it.
Uh-huh. Did you sell it?
I didn't sell it. It just got too old. Like, it got really, really slow. I had, like, a second generation or something like that. Like, it's, like, way outdated now.
Yeah.
But I didn't get another one after it was done. And I have this analog, and I love it.
Yeah.
Man. Or not analog. I guess it's still digital, but I call it analog because it's not an Apple Watch. It's not a smartwatch. I love it. I'm such a techno like minimalist now.
Yeah. It's good. That's a healthy way to move.
Yeah.
Man, I wish we had connected more. We you had an Apple Watch. We've done the walkie-talkie stuff.
Oh, that would have been
dude,
fun.
Dude, it would have been dope. but anyway, so that's what I'm reading right now. I said we'd go through quickly what we're reading right now, but we took our time with it. Yeah. But that's okay. It's good stuff. Good stuff.
We went to Bible college. We're long-winded.
We're long-winded. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So I guess then...
We were going to talk about the books that we have read. Notable books we have read in this last, 6 months or so, right?
Yeah, yep, yep. So if you want to go ahead and start and give me, just in a few minutes, kind of give me the book's title, what it's about, and kind of your quick synopsis and thought on it.
So let me just preface this really fast with, I'll probably say 6 months ago, I got really interested in the topic of evangelical feminism. Mm. It's kind of exploding right now. Mm-hmm. It's becoming a very popular opinion, very popular position to hold now, where you're like evangelical, so like you want to affirm like the essentials of the faith, but you're like a feminist, right? So kind of the most popular books on that recently have been Jesus and John Wayne and The Making of Biblical Womanhood, which they would both probably say that I'm trying to gaslight them by calling them evangelical feminists. I'm not, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. So I got really interested in the topic because I wanted to hear what they had to say. I saw that it was getting really, really, really popular. So I read Jesus and John Wayne. Mm-hmm. By Kristen Cobes Dume. Technically it's a history book, mm-hmm. is what it is. It's a selective history of evangelical interactions with politics and basically her thesis is that from about World War II to the election of Donald Trump in 2016, because that's the climax of the book, the election of Donald Trump in 2016.
That's where everything went wrong. That's the climax of everything.
The opposite.
Yeah, that's the climax of everything.
Yeah, everything started to go wrong around after World War II. Mm-hmm. And basically the thesis of her book is that the election of Donald Trump was the culmination of a culture of militant masculinity that had been building in evangelical culture from post-World War II era, maybe a little before, but especially after post-World War II era until, up to the present day. And she draws a line directly to complementarianism, directly to John Piper, so that's what the book is about. If anyone wants to know my thoughts about it, I would love to talk to you.
Yeah, give me your elevator pitch of yay or nay, where I go, oh, okay, and then you recommend or don't recommend.
So I'm not going to be complicated about this. I did not like the book. I do not recommend it. I think it's a bad book. However, she's an incredible author, really easy to read, really good writer. She also makes some good points. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. There are things she points out that we need to look into our history as evangelicals and say we probably messed up there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But the book, here's the thing about her book and the reason why I ultimately do not recommend it and why I think it's actually a bad book. I think it's a bad book because it's an extreme – It's what you would call activist scholarship. Mm. She has a thesis and an aim first, and she digs up into history to kind of
prove her point.
To prove her point and to get you to the same conclusion.
Yeah.
So it's not about argumentation. It's not about going to scripture. It's about it's about manipulating your conscience and sense of justice to get you really mad, mm-hmm. at evangelicalism, mm-hmm. and therefore stop supporting these certain doctrines.
Yep.
That's what it's about, and it's extremely selective, and here's possibly the most egregious part of the book. She assumes motives constantly. So just kind of like, this isn't a specific example, but like the movement of complementarianism in the 1980s, it basically, the way that it gets told, maybe this was the making of biblical womanhood, but they're very similar books in some ways. It's retold as a play for power. You know what I mean? It's a play for power. It's a means of subjugating women. And same thing for the doctrine of inerrancy. The doctrine of inerrancy is clarified in is it the Nashville Statement or the Danvers Statement? No, the Nashville Statement. It's the Nashville Statement on inerrancy. I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's clarified in Nashville. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's on inerrancy. Danvers, I think, is on,
is complementarianism.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So it's all a power play. And so she's assuming these motives, and you can't attribute pure motives. It's not about trying to be faithful to Christ. It's not about trying to be faithful to the scriptures. It can't be about that, because that doesn't prove her point.
Yep.
See what I'm saying?
Yep.
So yeah, that's why I don't, and the exact same reason why I don't like The Making of Biblical Womanhood by Beth Allison Barr. Once again, she's an excellent writer, really easy book to read. She's very, she gets your emotions going, you know, she tells a lot of stories, and she even makes some good points. You know what I mean? Like, there was a couple, ultimately, the downfall of the book is that she only deals with a couple of New Testament passages, and she doesn't actually, I have found this to be the case consistently with egalitarian arguments. They rely on making the text less clear. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the egalitarian arguments, they rely on making the text less clear, not more clear. So they rely on making you less sure about your interpretation, not giving you clarity and helpful tools to understanding the text. So that's basically what I would say, that's basically what the arguments boiled down to. And once again, it was about assuming these things. Like, she even said in an interview, like, what inerrancy actually is a tool for these powerful men to subjugate women. It's not a response to a particular movement among evangelicals to degrade the authority of Scripture.
Gosh, that feels so unauthoritative, so unconvincing, because it's just a retelling without, like, actual evidence. Yeah. It's like, you know, this thing that's happening, let me tell you the evil. It sounds a little bit conspiracy theory-ish.
That's exactly what it is. But both of these books, especially The Making of Biblical Womanhood, it kind of winds up being kind of a conspiracy of these institutions to just kind of, like, keep their boot on people. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I'm not going to lie, you know, I'm not the kind of person to, you know, push the social just, like, the Marxist button all the time, but she uses certain phrases that are absolutely key in understanding critical theory. Like, she uses the term interlocking injustices, which is a critical theory, kind of a paradigm way of thinking about things of sexism, racism, and homophobia being interlocking injustices that reinforce each other. And she uses that same metaphor with patriarchy and racism.
Interesting.
And of course, you know, the complementarians are the racists, you know, except, you know, we're the patriarchy. Which, and so,
I understand the framework that makes them make that argument, but I feel like it weakens the fight against things like racism and abuse and power control against women, where, like, those are things we should talk about. But when you interlock them in these injustices, you're putting them all into the same boat. And you can't have the unique conversations that you need to have about each of those problems. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep, I completely agree. Ultimately, what it boils down to is the authority of Scripture is not primary. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In these books. And also, another big thing that it boils down to is like just unfair assumptions about people's motives. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? For an agenda. They are interpreting people's motives because they have an agenda.
Yeah.
It's not that they actually, I mean, maybe they do actually think that these people think these things, but they don't actually provide any proof of it. They quote the Danvers statement, and then they say they did this to support the patriarchy. Like, they did this to keep their boot down on women. And it's like, well, now you're assuming a motive.
Yeah. And walk me through that. Don't just say exactly.
And it's only ever asserted.
Yeah.
It's not actually ever proven. Mm-hmm. And this is a pervasive systemic problem with these two books and other books like it. Those are the only ones I've read.
They're more emotional. They're meant to rile you up.
They're meant to rile you up with a extremely selective and uncharitable retelling of history.
Yeah. Yep.
Which you could make anyone look like the next Hitler by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Absolutely. I mean? If I selectively and uncharitably retold your life, I could make you look like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's just the way it works. Mm-hmm. So,
yep. Gotcha. Very good.
And another, sorry, that took so long. I'll just talk about like two more books. I read,
let me stop you. Let's go back and forth.
Oh yes, yes.
Let's
yes.
go back and Let's forth on yep. this one. So you had a twofer, and those were Jesus and John Wayne, and then Biblical Womanhood.
The Making of Biblical Womanhood.
Okay. Yeah. So, I guess I should have looked over my red books if I was reading over my challenge.
Sorry, I took so long.
No. Well, no. That's even more to my point. I should have gone over what I've read this year. Okay. There we are. It was a holistic list when I wanted just this year. Anyways, so one book I read, usually I read a lot of Christian living or theological books, and I'm trying to get a lot more variety, a lot more fiction, historical, and then theological in there. So one book, or two books rather, I'll do a twofer, you did a twofer, I'll do a twofer, is A Gentleman in Moscow. And Rules of Severity, both by Immortals, who's an American writer, and he is a phenomenal writer. From the perspective of historical background, he can put you in a scene and give you very specific things that are just fascinating. As a storyteller, I think he's pretty good as well. I think I probably need more exposure to him, or maybe just to become more cultured. But his books are really long, in really like slow burn, where it's not like storyline, build, climax, fall. There's like an antagonist or anything like that. It's like based on, it's a little bit monotonous, like the day in, day out of these characters.
More J.R.R. Tolkien. Less C.S. Lewis.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
More Lord of the Rings, less Narnia.
Exactly. Where you have these. So the first one character, it's a duke. He's trapped, not trapped, but he's under house arrest at a hotel in Russia. And he's there for years and years and years and years and years. He can't leave. He's under house arrest. And Rules of Civility, it follows this woman in New York City. And like some stuff happens in her life that's like really interesting or captivating, but it's mostly just like a monotonous, you get like halfway through the book and you're like, okay, what's gonna happen? I'm confused on like what's the.
You said you really liked the books though.
I did like the books for that very reason. So you get through it and you're like, what's going on? It's like a progression. It was for me. You get through the book and you're like, what's going on? Like, this needs to pick up, let's go. But then you get to another point where you go, oh, this is the point of the book. You're not welcomed into this like fantastical adventure of like these people, of like these lives that you'll never see or know. It's that all these people have a progression in their life of like things happening and they find meaning in it. And they come to a point of being settled. They're like antsy themselves. They're always like looking for something to happen. They're on the brink of something, like a new job, a love, escaping their house arrest or whatever, but they never actually do. And these characters are a little bit antsy, but as they get, and sometimes suicidal, and they get to the end of the book and they're content with who they are, where they are, and they get confidence and like, that's okay. That's all right. Like, I don't need all these other things or like these loves where like they're burned and like you kind of realize and resonate with that of like, oh yeah, like, I'm not going off and doing these incredible things. Like, I'm a little bit stuck. Even if you don't feel like you're, you know, you're per se stuck per se.
I wonder if that's an encouraging book to read, though.
It kind of is. But you have to get to that point. You know what I mean?
Where you're content with their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
As a story.
Yeah, you're like.
So you're kind of taking on their journey of contentedness with their own life.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Rules of Civility, she like navigates through the high society in New York City, and she like has like an okay job, but like people are like, you're meant for more, and you're like, oh my gosh, what's she gonna do? And there's like this really fascinating character that's like her love interest for a long time, and then like she gets burned by him and he's gone out of the story. She doesn't like get a new job or like start some incredible like business. And it gets to the end of the book and she's like married to a totally different person that's not in the book. She has like a totally different job, but it's not like she's not some like high class business person, but she's happy and she's content, and you're like left oddly satisfied at the end of the book. And it's just beautiful as he's going and describing all these things happening and like these little moments of like gentleman in Moscow, he eats breakfast in this cafe that's in the hotel, and he just like watches these people, you know, not in a creepy way, but just like kind of people watches and like sees what they're doing in their life. Like, he meets an architect and he meets an American officer, military officer, and just like he meets all these fascinating people, and he's not doing all these incredible, he's stuck in this hotel, he's not doing all these incredible things, but he's meeting them and like just enjoying life in the monotony that it is. So it's oddly satisfying.
Man, isn't that like kind of a lesson to us that like enjoying life and like happiness in life is so much like you'll end up just so much more satisfied of a person than if you just pursue big things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I don't mean big things like pursuing Christ. Like, Christ is the biggest thing, right? But like, oh, I want a big career. I want to do big things, big accomplishments, big money, big house, you know, big car.
Yeah.
Like, but instead you pursue like good, you pursue virtues, and you like enjoy. It's very Ecclesiastes, I think.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's exactly it. It's a maturity and a wisdom thing. As like a youth, you know, you're graduating high school, you're going to college, and you're like, the world is mine. I'm going to accomplish incredible things. I'm going to do this. Like, what's the next big thing? People who are under 35 are moving constantly. Like, what's the next big thing? Where am I going? What am I going to do? You know, they're antsy, but they're like excited. You can't pin them down. And it's this maturity thing of wisdom that like, and I've counseled people in this way before, where they're like, you know, I'm not content with my job. I have to do this and this. Like, I want to, if I'm not doing this one thing, I'm unhappy and I'm unsatisfied. And I go, there are so many people who have lived their life in obscurity, but they are happy and they have died, but they are okay. They're not like, they didn't miss out on something. They still lived a good life.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do something incredible out of this world. Right. And there's so many examples of that. And these two stories are beautiful examples of that. Man. That's my take on those two books. People could have different, they're long and not like incredibly complicated, but there's some few storylines in there, so people could have different perspectives. But yeah, that's That's my take on those two. So I did a twofer. You did a twofer. So, yeah.
Sorry for the cough.
No, it's okay.
Maybe we can edit that out.
I can't.
You can't. Okay. No.
It is what it is. It is.
You know, I feel like, and this is not, and I'm not trying to criticize anyone here, but I feel like kind of in our world, we have, our world kind of has a career first, marriage second kind of way of thinking. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm not going to get married till I really have my career nailed down. You yeah. know? Or I'm not going to.
Or have a baby until I have finances.
I right. know. I'm not going to have a baby till I have $20,000 in the bank or something like that. And it's like, you know, I mean, kind of the way I think about it. And I mean, there is some wisdom. Like, if you don't have any sort of stability at all, like maybe you should have a kind of stability before you get married. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I would agree with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be a kind of stability where you can be relatively sure you can look into the future and have a stable life with this person that you're about to marry, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that. There's some wisdom there.
Yep.
But I think that our world has kind of this mindset of like, well, if my spouse gets in the way of my job, bye spouse. See you later.
Oh yeah. You know it's it's a me thing.
Yeah, it's a me thing. And career is seen as the fulfillment of the human person.
Yeah.
As our telos. and you know, we center our lives, we put the vast majority of our time as human beings growing up into our career. Like, you know, education is seen as a means to a good job. A bachelor's degree is seen as a means to higher income, to bigger things, better things, right? To being a mover and a shaker. And I think that books like that maybe have a way of reorienting how we see the purpose of labor.
Mm-hmm.
As labor is not an end in itself,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it has an end of resulting in the flourishing of a home
yep.
and a community. You
yep.
know what I mean?
Yep.
So like, and not even just for like married people, you know what I mean? But like for single people too, you know what I mean? Or not married. I prefer the term not married because, you know, no one should be single. You know what I mean? Like yeah. no one yeah, should yeah, be yeah. all by themselves.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for the unmarried too, you know what I mean? Like your labor has an end. And I think of my job, you know, I don't really enjoy my job, but it provides the home and a means to see my family grow
yeah.
and to be able to enjoy that with them.
Yep.
And so I think books like that maybe have a way of doing that, of
yep.
kind of reorienting our mindset. So
yep.
I'll talk about the last book I'll talk about.
Yeah.
After reading Jesus and John Wayne and The Making of Biblical Womanhood, I needed something I agreed with. I yeah. needed to read something that I liked.
Yep.
That, you know what I mean? Like
yep.
that I was reading and I was nodding my head. Yeah, this is great. You yeah. know?
You needed to be preached to.
I needed to be preached to. So I read Kevin DeYoung's Men and Women in the Church. And that was like the antidote to the other
yeah.
two. It was like, oh, the Lord is so good. Like, yeah. I will say this.
He's a skilled writer. He's a little bit more methodical, which is good for my brain.
I think Kevin DeYoung is one of the sharpest thinkers in the church right now.
I agree.
He is an extremely intelligent and wise man. And I have never read something from him I didn't enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, so he's just a really talented writer, right? So yep. he has a way of saying things concisely. Like this book, Men and Women in the Church, it's probably it's at most a third, maybe a fourth the length of one of those other books,
mm-hmm.
but it packed so much wisdom and so much good teaching into it, and it was concise and enjoyable and even winsome. Like he cracked some jokes and stuff like that. It was
yeah,
really
he does.
Good.
Yep.
And so I absolutely love that. If you're looking for clarity on that issue, I highly recommend it.
Yep. He's very sharp and not afraid to have these tough conversations with people. So it gets him into hot water sometimes, mm-hmm. not by his own doing because he's right. saying something out of left field, but just because he's rather orthodox and in
yes.
a good, in a very good way.
Yes.
And
yeah.
so it makes people.
Yeah. Angry. I'm going to.
I'm going to break what I said. I said I would talk about one more book. I'm going to talk about another one more book. I read The Confessions by Augustine, which is long. It's a long book. It's so good, especially the first half. The first half is his autobiography. It's kind of like a spiritual autobiography. He talks about, like, the first half is like his gaffes and mistakes and you know, the wrong roads he went down. And he's using it as a means of teaching. Like, and it's all a big prayer. The whole book is a big prayer. He's like, oh, Lord, I did this thing. Why did I do this thing? This is why I did it. And this is why it was wrong. And Lord, this is what I should have done. Like, right. He uses it as a means of teaching. So it's really good. The second half is kind of like his philosophical musings on, like, the senses and stuff like that. So that part, the book feels kind of disjointed because of that. It kind of feels more like two books than one. But I highly recommend the book even so. Really, 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 really good. For even just like for thinking about like ways we can live a more holy life.
So. Yeah. Yep. No, that's good. That's you are not overstating when you say it's a long book. No. It's
The City of God is 45 hours to listen to. Oh,
good Lord.
Eventually, I'm going to do it. Eventually, I'm going to do it. But I'm like, I gotta work up to that.
I feel bad for the person who had to read all that out loud. I mean, I don't feel bad for them. It's a job. That's good for them. They probably were thankful for the consistent work. So. Okay.
This is probably just a good book.
Yeah, they probably enjoyed it. Yeah, yep. Okay, so I will hit... next, the book that I read a couple months ago called Handle with Care, How Jesus Redeems the Power of Touch in Life and Ministry by Lore Ferguson Wilbert.
What an interesting topic.
Yes. So I've got a couple of prefaces. Watermelon's piece of carrots. Watermelon's piece of carrots. to this book. So first of all, I've never heard of this author before. I've seen people recommend this book or like put it on their want to read on Goodreads, and I thought it looked interesting, so I added it, and I got it for Christmas, and I picked it as well because one, interesting topic, but two, I really want to start reading more female authors because I gravitate toward mostly Christian living or theological books and historical books. Those
which are primarily male authors.
Authors. I've been trying to seek out more female authors just to round out my reading better. And so this kind of hit two birds with one stone. Good topic and female author. So it was a fascinating book. I don't recall what rating I gave it. It might have been it was 3 out of 5. I'd probably give it 3.5 out of 5. It opened my eyes to how touch, like literally physically touching people, is a ministry that has gone underutilized in the church, and she naturally, I think, gravitates towards how there, out of purity culture, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, came this like hesitancy for men and women to touch in any sort of way, in you know, the regular church gathering, other gatherings. You know, within friends where you like you do the awkward side hug or you don't hug at all. You don't really like you don't really like look at them too much. And she talked about it from the perspective as well. She's married now, but she wasn't for a long time. She didn't
get to have a big stack of ESV study Bibles between you and the next
female. Right. Yeah, 30 ESV study Bibles. Yeah. A couple commentaries in there.
A D.A. Carson book just for good
measure. Just to round it out. but she talked about how that was like devastating for her that, you know, as a single person, she didn't experience the warmth and the healing that is touch. And and she talked about how it was a blessing at times where she had like roommates, female roommates who they, you know, they were very touchy, where they they like sat on the couch close together, or they hugged a lot, or you know, they were just physically close.
Yeah.
And then she talked about how in the church, especially for single people who don't experience that warmth and that love and that touch that you feel in a family, like the constant affection, you know, ideally, that you would feel in a family, how isolating that can be, and how we as a church should, church universally, should be reaching out to these single people in that way, inviting them into our homes, not being scared of them, and giving them a hug and loving on them. And
so you're saying we need the holy kiss.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Well, she made a lot of really good points in that way, but I think she erred, which is why I gave it 3 stars instead of 4. She erred too much on don't not do something or reach out physically to people because of what they might think. Or if you're worried they might be uncomfortable with it, or you're worried how they might perceive it. Like if you're like going and giving someone a hug, that it, you know, you're a guy and you have a friend and you go hug their wife like at church or whatever, you don't not do it. Or a single person, you know, single gal at church, you go over and give her a hug, like, hey, good to see you, or they're hurting or something, give them a hug. I don't think she was just talking about hugs, I guess, but that's all I can think of.
Talk about the holy kiss.
She erred on don't do it because of what they might think or you might think. Obviously, don't do things because, you know, they're truly uncomfortable with it. Don't. She wasn't advocating.
You don't want to force yourself on someone.
And I felt uncomfortable with that reasoning, and she had little biblical evidence that she was using for it. Like she did certainly use it. But it was more experiential, and she didn't go crazy. She was vague on some things that were like, where she talked about like touch and self-love, that like left me like, why are you adding this? What are you talking about?
I kind of wish with books like that, I kind of wish they would have like a companion or like an appendix, like practical application. What do you do in this situation, that situation?
Well,
what is this? Is that good? Is that bad? Is that wrong? What's you're like, because I feel like with books like this, they give you this really lofty idea that you're like, oh man, this is such a good idea, this is such a good thought, like, yeah, I want to apply this. But then you think like, I don't know if I should hug that person though. You know what I mean?
Well, she mentioned that in the first few chapters where she goes, if you're looking for just that, what you just mentioned, she goes, I'm not going to give that to you. She goes, I'm going to rather teach you, or try to teach you and convince you, that this is necessary and what it means to actually love and care for people. And I'm going to give you that principle. I'm not going to give you the specifics because they are so nuanced. Which was helpful on the outset, but still left me like a little bit unsatisfied with like, how do I apply this?
Yeah.
Like, this is great, but like, still the nuances are what kind of give me hesitation. And I wasn't super comfortable with the reasoning of like, it doesn't matter what other people think, or, you know, what might come of it in that way. Like, you need to reach out in love and obviously be aware and be kind and don't push anything, but also don't withhold. And so
it leaves you in this kind of uncomfortable position where like you have an ideal, but you're not sure how to use it.
What it was very helpful with was that it was a good anti-culture book in that it desexualized touch, because touch, it's infiltrated the church where all touch is erotic. All touch has some sort of like sexual, like, and this was very anti, like, no, that's not the case. It's not even the case in the whole world right now. It's not like a 21st century exclusive thing. It's like an American thing. Where like,
I feel like, man, this is kind of my hobby horse. I feel like we have porn to blame for that.
Absolutely. No, that's, and she actually touches on that in the book. But I totally agree. We as a culture have been inundated with that. Yeah. Not even just like explicit pornography, but in all of our media, mm-hmm. social media certainly, but TV shows and movies, yeah. it's in there. So
I'll use this word. It's not even a word, but just kind of all of our media just feels kind of porny. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just feels kind of like,
yeah,
like this doesn't need to be here. This isn't mm-hmm. normal.
Yeah.
But it's become normal in our media.
Yeah. And I think there's some reasons for that, partly that we have all these streaming services that are coming out and they're mm-hmm. not regulated like daytime television was. Yeah. And so you couldn't like show and have all these things, or like these movie producing companies, they had like certain standards. It was like just exclusive to, well, you know, HBO or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like that was the bad stuff. But now you have Netflix and Disney Plus, and you have Apple TV mm-hmm. and all these different, so they can put whatever the heck they yeah. want in there. Anyways, so this was helpful because it desexualized touch, and I thought that was good in that way, yeah. to where, you know, I see people and I'm like, they're my friend and I love them, and or they're my family. Like, I don't need to be afraid to be like, hi, like, good to see you. And I, yeah. or they're like upset and I can, you know, put my hand on their shoulder and be like, yeah, I am so sorry. Yeah. And like, there's healing in that. And so I agreed in that way. And that was helpful. But again, some of her conclusions, if taken, or her arguments, if taken all the way, to its end, it like left you wanting of like, this still is kind of sketchy. Mm. Three stars feels pretty accurate.
Pretty
my,
good.
My yeah. rating for me. Okay. So, yeah. So anyways. All right.
Well, that's what we've been reading.
That's what we've been reading. I hope this was helpful. Like I said, I'm going to put a lot of these, hopefully all of them, in our show notes so yep. you can look at them. But if you like books, this was the episode to listen to. We like yep. books. We like to
we
read
love books.
So we'll do more specific book, yep. one book centered, I think, episodes in the future.
Yeah.
And hopefully this won't be another year until we yeah. record
yep.
again.
So, yep.
Any last thoughts or anything, Colin?
If I had to give a top book that I have read in recent days, I have to say it's been J. Boot Sosetsky's On the Meaning of Sex. It is okay. a paradigm shifting book.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend anyone to read that book.
Love it. I will highly recommend Deeper by Dane Ortlund. Mm. It has been really quick.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for if you're even still subscribed. Thanks for doing that. If you're coming across this episode and you're not subscribed, go ahead and do that. For whatever reason, I don't know.
I'm not sure why you
just subscribe.
It'll help us feel better.
See what happens.
See what happens.
So, all right. Well, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.